Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Arcane Semantics. Well, on the anniversary, the 18th anniversary here of 9/11, I would like to touch on it more than a bit, actually. What all this means, the implications of what had occurred, the operation which had occurred on September 11th, 2001. It was an operation, as far as I'm concerned. It's a good way to describe it, to be sure you set the tone that things were not as they have been presented, and quite nefarious and deceptive, to say the least. These days, YouTube is getting as draconian as ever in censorship of this particular topic. You'll be hard-pressed to find a video out there that you may have once appreciated in these past couple decades on this deception. The world, really, not just the United States, has undergone. The war on terror has been the outcome, justification for endless wars, endless war budgets, and of course the Middle East is a prime focus for all of this. It does go in line with both the Israeli plans for greater Israel, as prophesized, as well as the project for the new American century, which we had disclosed to us quite thoroughly. Originally planning to be 7 countries in 5 years, they're still trying to get around to Iran to this day. But this is all very relevant to the discussion. All of these factors are so interrelated, and yet it's so much avoided by anyone who covers this in corporate media. Even the 9/11 Commission omits a great deal of important information. Of course, they would debate whether it's important in many of these cases. We'll see. I do have a nice little audio clip compilation I've prepared, which has a lot of good pertinent information condensed rather nicely. Information you can research a bit more yourself to confirm, but which all should help lead you and those you interact with in the right direction, if you haven't already come to enough conclusions of what the implications of all of this are and who the perpetrators behind all of this were. There were a lot of nefarious ongoings at the towers the weeks leading up to, and days leading up to, the event. I've touched on this times in the past. A few quotes. We have some audio quotes from one of the gentlemen here as well, Scott Forbes, who worked in the towers. I have a clip of a radio interview he did on Deadline Live discussing the World Trade Center South Tower, in which he was a worker. But there were a couple of quotes pertinent to these days leading up to the event. One was from Ben Fountain, This was a 42-year-old financial assistant who worked on the 47th floor of the South Tower. He told People magazine that, quote, "How could they let this happen? They knew this building was a target. Over the past few weeks, we'd been evacuated a number of times, which is unusual. I think they had an inkling something was going on. We had an uncovering of an Israeli spy ring just before the day of the incident. This was the largest spy ring ever discovered in history. Working inside America. Israeli Mossad links to World Trade Center attack. The precision was definitely something that required a large amount of people. It was not something that could have been done with one terrorist group. Mossad, Israel's military intelligence agency, infiltrated the most sensitive computer networks in the United States through a little startup company known as P-Tech in Quincy, Massachusetts. Most notably, it was this infiltration that allowed the events of September 11, 2001 to occur. If the crimes of 9/11 had been properly investigated, these people would have been investigated and booked long ago. The Mossad connection is obvious. In order to facilitate a computer network penetration, Mossad set up an IT consultancy and software provider named P-Tech, using Lebanese and Arabs as the front man, financiers, and founders, and keeping their Jewish-American Sayan in a secondary but critical position. First, a note of background on what P-Tech did from the January 2005 article, Michael Chertoff and the Sabotage of the P-Tech Investigation on the Rigorous Institution WeBlog. Joe Bergantino, a reporter for WBZ-TV's investigative team, was torn. He could risk breaking a story based on months of work investigating a software firm linked to terrorism, or heed the government's demand to hold the story for financial security reasons. In mid-June, Bergantino received a tip from a woman in New York who suspected that P-Tech, a computer software company in Quincy, Massachusetts, had ties to terrorists. P-Tech specialized in developing software that manages information contained in computer networks. Bergantino's investigation revealed that P-Tech's clients included many federal government agencies, including the U.S. Army, the U.S. Air Force, and U.S. Naval Air Command, Congress, the Department of Energy, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, NATO, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Secret Service, and even the White House. P-Tech was doing business with every federal government in defense and had access to key government data, Bergantino said. The Mossad handler at P-Tech was an American named Michael S. Goff, who was disingenuous about what he did and where he worked as well, and when he left the P-Tech Corporation. It should be noted that P-Tech got on its feet in 94. Goff implies that he left P-Tech when Goff Communications began in 1994. Certainly not true. We have what his website says about his work there, for one. It states that Michael was marketing manager at P-Tech Inc., a leading provider of business process modeling, design, and development software. In this capacity, Michael managed various marketing programs and activities, including public relations, direct mail, web development, collateral, trade shows, and seminars. Additionally, Michael worked closely with the PTEC sales organization to perform competitive analysis, as well as manage lead trafficking and fulfillment activities. When Michael first joined PTEC, he shared responsibilities between marketing and information systems for the company. As information systems manager, Michael handled design, deployment, and management of its Windows and Macintosh data and voice networks. As part of this effort, Michael developed Lotus Notes-based systems for sales and marketing, lead trafficking, and IS service and support requests. Michael also performed employee training and handled all procurement for software systems and peripherals. From Goff Communications' website, you will notice that one of his current prize clients is an Israeli company known as Guardium, G-U-A-R-D-I-U-M. Guardium is less than 5 miles from Hanscom AFB, site of MIT's Lincoln Labs, and about the same distance from Boston's Logan Airport. The Israelis are all over MIT and Boston. Guardium, a database security firm, is clearly a Mossad operation working in a critical area, the same area that the two planes that hit the World Trade Center originated, Boston's Logan Airport. Who finances Guardium? Well, these are three firms, all Israeli, and all manned by Mossad agents. It should be noted that Mossad's headquarters are in Herzliya. It is all clear the three firms, Cedar Fund, Veritas Venture Partners, and Stage One, are all Mossad funding outfits. So with PTEC, what we had was an American Scion, a Jewish agent who works with the Mossad when necessary. Michael S. Goff, who had Mossad agents feeding him information and directing him while he worked with his Lebanese Muslim partners in PTEC. Now, I have all these documents I refer to and sources. If anyone wants to email me, you know, I mean, feel free to at the station email or my name email on any of this information you'd like the documents to show anyone else or to have provided in your dossier. Ultimately, though, we had one Israeli company who owned the services provided to all of the airports related to 9/11. Okay, all of the 9/11 airports were serviced by one Israeli owned company. And to make the situation worse, a private security company called ICTS, owned by an Israeli, Erza Harrell, and registered in the Netherlands, was employed at Charles de Gaulle Airport to screen passengers boarding U.S. planes. Most of its personnel are ex-Shin Bet officers. The company covers security at Boston's Logan Airport, where the American Airlines plane came down after flight attendants and passengers overpowered Reed. Points to Richard Reed as someone who was known to be dangerous, the shoe bomber, but allowed him to board a flight from Tel Aviv to Paris. The idea that an Israeli-owned company had inside access to the airport, used to launch an abortive terror attack, brought to mind the strange message Odigo Systems, another Israeli-owned company with offices near the World Trade Towers. You've heard of Odigo, O-D-I-G-O, related to this as well. And we had warning there of the impending attacks before the hijacked planes had even left the ground. There were two employees in particular, and the company to this day says they have no idea how those individuals were given such information. And there was the story of crotch bomber Umar Farouk Abdul Muttalib. Sorry, folks, I'm butchering that. Who was allowed to board Northwest Flight 253 from Amsterdam on Christmas Day 2009. Again, gate security that allowed him to pass was ICTS. Just to give more background on how these agencies clearly are abetting in many of these incidents. And ICTS has been confirmed to be an Israeli-owned company. If you visit their own website, it sells services to every airport for which the hijacked planes operated, including security, sometimes through wholly owned subsidiaries. Subsidiaries like Huntley USA Corporation. The incredible feat of hijacking four aircraft without a single arrest at the gate would require the resources of a nation state. This is even more true with the revelation that at least one gun had managed to be aboard a hijacked plane. One company had automatic inside access to all of the airports from which hijacked planes departed on 9/11. And to the airports used by Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, an Israeli company. One that Mossad agents could easily find employment with without the management knowing who they were or what their purpose really was. One thing is clear, by virtue of the Odigo warning, someone knew enough about the planned attacks to warn Odigo before the planes had even departed the airport gates. Yet they did not call the Israeli secret security company at the airports, which could have stopped the flights from leaving. That is curious. And just think about that. I think that's a good point. We have so much that this Patriot Act problem reaction solution fulfilled, as I mentioned earlier, some of the major motives. Greater Israel, Project for the New American Century, and the police state in general. So much justification, even censorship. There's so many things which this helped for a totalitarian leadership. Now, I have a lot of information I'm not going to present on the actual impacts. There are a lot of good bits of footage, though, I've collected, which include even flashes indicating some of the cutter charges when some of the dead drop classic controlled demolition tower falls actually occurred. I'm going to play those video clips in a bit here, as I did compile a few choice selections from a few different pieces I had. It's pretty clear as far as the way they came down that the official story doesn't hold up. If you just look at the research, I mean, jet fuel does not melt steel beams, but to come down in its own footprint, you have it falling straight down. There was some debris that fell, incidentally, for those who claim that planes did not actually impact. So it's not that zero debris fell at that time, but it is clear how they ultimately came down. There are so many connections to resources, organizations, including nation state level, like FEMA were in town the day before 9/11. A lot of people aren't aware of even that, for that matter. We had an extraordinary amount of information that came out right before this event. The missing money regarding the Pentagon budget. A lot of people aren't aware that the towers were economically in a very bad state regarding the asbestos codes. That basically wasn't worth keeping the building up. To be able to clear it, start from scratch, was clearly a more economically feasible option. It didn't make sense to a lot of people why this building was obtained by the current lessee when this information was clearly circulating. But he found a way to start from scratch with the building. Good old Lucky Larry. Larry Silverstein. I really think that focusing too much on any one aspect of the mechanics is a mistake. Those who look into more and more of this information realize this is not that unique. We'll have a lot of people who are almost conditioned to say 9/11, the ultimate to impact us or deception to learn about, but as much as it set the tone for this new era, being deceived by our government with these sort of motives in mind is something that happens again and again and again, and you'll notice it's nowhere near the first. But I mean, this one was something which deceived a great deal of people. We have a huge set of connections. If I were to put all these together to different organizations, to different individuals in high-ranking positions, both in the U.S. and in Israel as well. Also, though, as far as how the buildings came down, it is interesting how people get caught up in trying to find some other means. You know, the controlled demolition is not good enough for them. As I say, they'll complain that there was not enough debris from the planes and that they couldn't go all the way into the building or something. You'll have this insistence on directed energy weapons. Now, I don't see how that helps explain how they collapsed in their own footprint. Classic controlled demolition. But you know, people cling to these things. The old people like Judy Wood out there. Disinfo agents who poison the well and keep you arguing with each other. Uncertainty. They want to keep an air of uncertainty in a large enough percentage of people about enough aspects, facts related to the incident so that you can continue the illusion, continue the status quo. I had mentioned how the Patriot Act and the war agenda benefited so greatly from this. They don't want to lose that, most certainly. And not at all, but certainly not at this time period. As I say, they didn't even get to Iran yet, and the war agenda certainly is not cooling as far as how many players we have in there stirring the pot whenever they can, even more than what the commander-in-chief often attempts. Now, the photographs have been widely circulated regarding a lot of the load-bearing members showing evidence of cutter charges, these diagonal cuts, these classic indications of controlled demolition, these just diagonal like melted cuts in the beams. And I have really nice photos of some of these, for that matter. Anyone who's interested in this, though, could find it out there. You know, I mean, it's circulating quite a bit. And anyone who thinks fire brought down the towers is insane. Anyone who doesn't understand the implications of how many were involved here. And no, I don't think, again, that it was just Israel. It was the U.S. and Israel, both involved here. Saudis, I'd say, are a distraction. I really don't think they're much consequence. The point that this government is delegitimized. Even the reaction the president had that day is very noteworthy. I mean, he was reading to children, and a Secret Service officer whispered in his ear, and he went right back to reading to them. They did not scramble whatsoever. You would think they can't rule out the commander-in-chief. The president could be a target. Very often they'll start driving in random directions, get them mobile, get the president mobile at the very least, and out of whatever situation and location he's currently at, in. But no, none of this occurred. There's a great article called The Dog That Did Not Bark. I have to double check, but I believe that's the name of it. This one's, I think, on the What Really Happened website, and it illustrates this point very well. I mean, just little things like that. Now, Marvin Bush, a lot of people don't know his ties in all of this as well. There are just, as I say, so many people who had advanced knowledge. A lot of the businesses around Ground Zero relocated conveniently in time. A lot of individuals who worked in the towers didn't show up for work that day. Jewish individuals. Jews working in the towers, basically, were tipped off. It wasn't just one or two people, such as those at Odego Corporation, but those were examples. These cutter charges, though, and these photos of this are a pretty good example, I'd say, of something to just show people who refuse to believe their government lied to them. Because how was this all pulled off if the U.S. was not in on it? Even if it was Israel, you're telling me that they set all this up. And when you look at all the facts, what I was saying about the condition of the building, the asbestos, now we have the BBC reporting World Trade Center 7 collapsing at 4:54 p.m. That was 20 minutes before it occurred. I have actually more recently confirmed that it wasn't just BBC. We had CNN and Fox also report early on World Trade Center 7 collapsing before it actually happened. Now, that is another great, again, piece of information to relay to people. But definitely, check out all of this yourself. Okay? All of this is excellent information. I mean, showing people it's an inside job in any of these approaches for your focus, and then the implications, that's even more important. How much, as I say, this delegitimizes our government, and you start to see how much it has benefited their plans, the police state and never-ending wars and military budgets. We're living in a wartime economy and on the verge of another major depression. I'm not going to say recession, it's a depression. Come on. We can't even hear that word. Like, there could only have been one depression, but the military spending, it just compounds all the other reasons why the economy is the way it is, including the Federal Reserve. It's just all justified because of this war on terror. What the perfect enemy, you know, for someone concerned with a budget. Because, you know, they're never defeated, are they? How do you kill terror? Can't really ever stomp out this theory of these terrorists hiding under every bush. Arabs with box cutters, you know. Gotta look out for the next batch of those. There's just so much infiltration we've had into our culture, Western culture. And you know what I mean. How much everything is changing deliberately. All at once, though, it seems very, very increased. But 9/11 here, as I say, it's not that unique in how commonplace it is for the government to lie to you and to engineer justification for whatever it requires. That's really all this is really about, is justification for everything that we are subjected to and allowing. This country, this military, and support for Israel to maintain, to continue. But a lot of this is good information to spread to people. I mean, as I mentioned, even little facts. What Donald Rumsfeld had announced one day prior. Little facts like the asbestos problem with the buildings, how it was much more economical to rebuild, you know, destroy them and rebuild them than to try to replace all of the asbestos that was in the Twin Towers. The overwhelming evidence, as I say, that it did not collapse according to the official story. But really, people should be able to pretty easily, at this point, I'd say, come around when we see our whole society, people who are resisting, you know, they see our whole society getting transformed now. And more people than ever are willing to listen. I say go out there and help facilitate that. We're having more and more states hiding 9/11 recordings from families, lawyers, and the general public. So they're still pressing hard, but we're still pressing harder. You know, and I know I sound like I contradict myself. It's not that unique in how we're deceived, but it is a major justification for so much which was to follow. And it will be what I think helps wake a lot of people up to looking into any number of other topics. You know, once they see they were deceived about this. And we're getting more and more never before revealed information, even footage. There was recently some footage out about Ground Zero, no less. Images of a cleanup never seen before. It's crazy how much more information is constantly coming out of Ground Zero, of even the impacts. I've been seeing more footage lately detailing, as I said, some of the cutter charge flashes. You will see many talk about planes being holograms. I leave all that alone. I suggest you do as well. There's plenty of information about what can be confirmed and indicated. And that's all we need. And then move on to the implications. Okay? So you really have to keep people steered away from all of these alternate means that really have no explanation, but keep people arguing. They keep people debating. And that's what they want. Never-ending debate on 9/11. In oddball theory introduction. But it is amazing how many people didn't show up for work, how many businesses were relocated. These are great facts to share with people, I would say. It definitely lends a little more insight into the perpetrators, who benefits, the whole problem, reaction, solution, which we see so often throughout history. A lot of people just aren't realizing how many connections, as I say, insiders had to a lot of these buildings and vehicles. It's interesting just how many people weren't where they should have been. You know, even Larry Silverstein, he was at some therapeutic, what was it, acupuncture, I want to say, or something like that. Well, that was his excuse, because normally on that day of the week, he was always at a meeting at that time of day in the towers. But magically that week, lucky Larry. And that is great information to share with people as well. I'm going to go on to that clip now, folks. I really don't get too metaphysical about it. I mean, I heard someone earlier even, I think it was maybe yesterday, trying to talk about something they expect to happen now at the end of this year. Just because 18 years, numerology of that, they translated it to 666. And they're saying, so the 18th year anniversary, they expect something major. I really don't want any of that, folks. As I say, that's more distraction. You know, we don't need people mucking up the facts or kookifying the discussion when you try to spread this more and more. That's exactly what people want. I bet that person may very well have been doing just that, just trying to kookify the environment, calling in with that to the show they were. But if you have something legitimate, or just want to call and you know, talk about your impression of all this, the implications, and just how much it should convince more and more people that it's time for a new system, a new leadership, you might want to look into a lot of the other times we were lied to by our government, for that matter. It also exposes the control this country has by Israel. That is one important thing that you don't get as frequent with some of these other deceptions. It is a great example for that, as was the USS Liberty, for that matter. But this clip is condensed material from a number of documentaries on 9/11. Some are just short bits of facts listed. And just some of the strange occurrences in the weeks and days leading up to 9/11. I was discussing that earlier in the show. I have some people on here who are going to discuss it a bit. The one was, once again, Scott Forbes, who had worked in the South Tower. He had worked for Fiduciary Trust, reported on these evacuations, and the upper half of the South Tower being powered down. This was for a full 36 hours that it was powered down. Unprecedented. For 36 hours, the power was off. Of course, that includes no security cameras. And that's the perfect opportunity to place these cutter charges. It's a very important aspect, I think, is not too often explored. I mean, that is no coincidence. And it is a great example of what could be looked into further, and that you never hear, even in the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, 9/11 Truth Commission, all this, you don't hear a lot of this information ever brought up. But it's some of the most important information for those who are on the fence still. It brings it home. And then you can move on, once you accept this deception has occurred, to, well, what does this imply? What does this mean? And where do we go from here? But without further ado, folks, have a listen here. It's pretty interesting. And we'll be back after these clips. Cheers.
The day before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld declared war, not on foreign terrorists.
The adversary is closer to home. It's the Pentagon bureaucracy.
He said money wasted by the military poses a serious threat.
In fact, it could be said that it's a matter of life and death.
Rumsfeld promised change, but the next day, the world changed. And in the rush to fund the war on terrorism, the war on waste seems to have been forgotten.
My 03 budget calls for more than $48 billion in new defense spending.
More money for the Pentagon when its own auditors admit the military cannot account for 25% of what it already spends.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
$2.3 trillion, with a T. That's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America.
All three collapses were pretty close to classic examples of what they call controlled demolition. When dynamite or some kind of explosives are placed throughout the building at all the crucial points, and then they put them on a computer and they bring them down in certain order, and therefore the building comes straight down so it doesn't fall on these other buildings. And they come down in virtually free fall speed. And that's what happened here. All three buildings. You can see them on all sorts of places on the website. You don't see them on TV anymore. They showed them the first night. And Dan Rather, you know, bless his soul, comes right out and blurts out the truth. He says, "Boy, that looks just like controlled demolition." The 9/11 Commission also does not tell you that Marvin Bush, the president's brother, and their cousin, Wirt Walker, were the principals of the company that was in charge of security for the World Trade Center. They don't... All sorts of coincidences here. They also don't tell you that there were many reports of people who worked in the building saying, you know, we got a shutdown order, so for 3 days we couldn't go in the World Trade Center. There were engineers coming in and out. We didn't know what.
Again, his name is Scott Forbes. He joins us from across the pond today. Scott, thank you for making time for us.
You're very welcome. Hello.
Let's see, where do we start here? We don't have a lot of time, but I think what we should do first off is, just tell us maybe what the atmosphere was leading up to 9/11, exactly what your job was and what you did there in the World Trade Center towers.
Sure. I worked for, as you said, Fiduciary Trust in the South Tower. I was based on the 97th floor, where our data center was. About 3 weeks prior to 9/11, our company, along with many others in the towers, were given notice that there was going to be a power down in the top 50% of floors in the Southern Tower. This was unprecedented. As you can imagine, a lot of financial institutions in the building, and to have a complete loss of power meant a complete loss of systems. And for an organization like my company, it was truly extraordinary.
I mean, people probably scrambling as soon as they could to secure their systems before the power down.
Yep, that was part of the deal.
Have there been, let me, because for the sake of time, I want to keep this moving as much as possible, Scott. Had there been any power downs like this? Again, you were notified by the Port Authority there'd be a 36-hour power down at the top half of your tower. Had there been anything like this prior to this particular power down? And exactly, give us a time frame of when you were notified about the power down as related to 9/11. What was the date of the power down, and had there been one prior to this?
Okay, the power down was on the Saturday and Sunday prior to 9/11, so that would have been the 8th and 9th of September. We were given 3 weeks' notice. It was relatively short time notice period to make all the preparations needed. And it was unprecedented. We'd never experienced a power down in the towers, as far as I am aware. I had worked in the towers from 1998. My colleagues who had been in the building well beyond that could not remember an occasion such as this, apart from the bomb incident in the early 90s.
Well, let's move to this, Scott, because Now the power has been down, and you see a number of maintenance workers coming into the building. What was in your mind suspicious or notably suspicious about some of these workers coming in to come in for the power down?
Actually, at the time, I wasn't suspicious at all. It was just part of the fact that there was a power down and that there were workers in overalls in the building.
But looking back now, you noticed that there were some suspicious behavior with these workers.
Well, of course, looking back, you question everything, and you wonder, well, the main reason, one of the main reasons why I became suspicious was I got in touch with the Port Authority, and I got in touch with the 9/11 Commission to register this piece of information so that it would be acknowledged. If only to be thrown away. And I had no acknowledgement. They did not come back to me. I repeatedly called and wrote letters to them. I've had no acknowledgement. It's as if this information is of no interest to anyone, but to me it seems to be part of the puzzle and should be registered. I was not in the office on 9/11 because of working that weekend. I had the day off on the Tuesday. And so I was in my apartment, which overlooked the Trade Center. I lived in Jersey City, across the river from the towers, so I was eyewitness to what went on there. And as soon as I saw the first tower go down, the South Tower, I was highly suspicious. It just didn't look correct. It looked like a controlled demolition. It did not look like a building collapsing, either from an aircraft hitting it or from a fire inside. It seemed to crumble into dust.
Yeah.
It just didn't ring true.
10 disturbing 9/11 secrets. Number 10, 9/11 Commission. Key members of the 9/11 Commission state that the commission was set up to fail. Lee Hamilton, head of the commission, and many other members of the 9/11 Commission criticized the government for sabotage. This was due to terrible funding, lack of time given to complete the commission, and conflicting interests of many members chosen by the government, and many alleged cover-ups. Max Clayland resigned after labeling the commission a national scandal and saying that the government wants to cover up the truth. He also said that officials from the Pentagon lied to the 9/11 commission. Number 9. Funding. The General Accounting Office of the United States claims that the average funding for commissions into scandals and other investigations is around $30 to $40 million. Despite this, 9/11, the largest terrorist attack on American soil, only received $15 million, leading many to believe that the US government purposefully underfunded the 9/11 Commission in an attempt to hide facts about 9/11. Number 8. Building 7. World Trade Center 7, next to the Twin Towers, collapsed at 5:20 p.m., more than 7 hours after the second tower fell. No planes hit the building whatsoever, and was only damaged slightly by fire. The BBC reported the building has collapsed live on air, 20 minutes before it actually collapsed. The report even showed Building 7 behind the reporter as she documented the collapse. World Trade Center 7 was the largest CIA headquarters, and housed offices which were investigating stock and accounting fraud. Building 7 was also the first building to be cleaned up, and all evidence from the building was destroyed. Number 7. Larry Silverstein. Wealthy CEO of Silverstein Properties, Larry Silverstein, made some questionable investments on July 24, 2001, 49 days before the attack. Silverstein spent more than $14 million of his personal assets to win a bid on a 99-year lease of the World Trade Center. This did not render Silverstein owner, however, did make him the primary benefactor of the insurance money that was paid out from the attack. After a long and expensive legal battle with the insurance firm, Silverstein was personally awarded almost $5 billion by a federal court. Number 6. Bush's security. At 9:06 a.m., President Bush was informed that a plane had hit the World Trade Center and that America was under attack. Immediately, many high-profile politicians, such as Vice President Dick Cheney, were rushed to a secure position. However, despite his location being known, President Bush remained at Booker Elementary School for 20 minutes after learning about the attack. Number 5. Bush lies. While at a speech regarding the 9/11 attacks in Orlando, Florida in 2001, a small child asked Bush about his feelings when he heard about the attacks. Bush stated that he saw the first plane hit the tower live on a television at the school he was visiting. However, many have questioned this claim, as the only footage of the plane hitting the first tower was yet to be released until September 12, 2001, a day after the attacks. Number 4. Bad advice. After the plane hit the first tower, many people in the second tower began to try and flee. However, the people were advised by the Port Authority to remain at their desks. Some still decided to try and escape, but guards blocked their exit from the tower, leaving them locked in. Over 1,000 people later died in the tower. Number 3. The Pentagon. The Pentagon is arguably the most secure and monitored government building in North America. Despite this, no actual footage of a plane hitting the building was ever released. The government only released footage of an explosion seen from a nearby gas station. However, the footage only shows an explosion, no plane. Number 2. William Cooper. On June 28, 2001, 3 months before the 9/11 attacks, William Cooper made some unbelievable predictions on a radio broadcast. He stated that an attack on American soil would be blamed on Osama bin Laden before bin Laden was infamous or well recognized at all. Cooper was found shot dead in his home 2 months after the 9/11 attack. Number 1. Flight 93. The 9/11 Commission reported that the third plane, Flight 93, crashed in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. County Coroner Wally Miller was one of the first at the site and quoted seeing no plane. He said, quote, "It looked like someone just got a scrap truck, dug a 10-foot ditch and dumped trash in it." He also said that there were, quote, "no bodies," and to this day has not seen, quote, "a single drop of blood."
Why won't they identify Israel as the primary moving force behind 9/11? Why won't they do that? Finally, you're exasperated. Who did it? Tell me once and for all, who planned this? Who coordinated it? Who orchestrated these crimes? And investigators say, well, even though we know, we're not going to tell you who did it. And you're like, what? Why won't you tell me who did it? If you keep silent about this, you're basically protecting the criminals that were involved in it. Not basically, you are. So by remaining silent for 10 years now, you're allowing mass murderers to be free, to get away with it, to walk. And so the investigators, they turn around and they're getting ready to walk away. And they say, well, we have different views on possible efficacy. But then they say, well, we can tell you what their favorite color is. This is my way of saying, we know all about the controlled demolition. We know all about the Pentagon. We all know about Shanksville and the military stand down and the plane swapping and everything else. But they won't tell you who did it. The 9/11 truth movement was created before 9/11 ever happened. In other words, if you're going to implement a crime of this vastness and this destruction with this far-reaching impact, don't you think you're going to also have disinfo artists in place right off the get-go to start diverting everybody in opposite directions, giving them red herrings, leading them down different rabbit holes, and so forth? Well, of course you are. And considering how horribly they pulled this operation off, where the World Trade Center tower controlled demolition with anybody, Dave, that has an eighth grade understanding of science realizes buildings don't come down that way. Anyone that looked at the Pentagon right after this event occurred, realized there was no plane there. And when we look at Shanksville, we see a 20-foot crater that a 757 was supposed to be swallowed up inside of. None of it made sense.
Right.
Anyone with an inquiring mind, anyone with a critical mind realizes the whole thing was bunk. It was bogus. So they have these disinfo artists there getting everybody going in wrong directions. But then around 2004 or so, David Ray Griffin appears on the scene, writes these great books. Everybody welcomes him into the movement, and he gives it some legitimacy, because for the first two or three years when being a 9/11 researcher was actually really dangerous and you were accused of committing treason to question the government, all us guys that were doing this, none of us were credentialed, none of us were doctors or professors, or we didn't have any initials after our names. So then we have scholars for 9/11 truth and David Ray Griffin and all of these guys that supposedly are legitimate. But what they're doing is still not only taking a lot of our research and making it their own then, but they're still not pointing the finger at Israel. And around this time, around 2003, 2004, is when the real strong information about Israeli involvement was really starting to be published and so forth. And by the fifth anniversary, as I said, 9/11 evil came out. So we need these other guys to counteract that, to not talk about Israel. And if we jump ahead to the 10-year anniversary, they're still not talking about it. So a lot of these guys were deliberately put in place not to talk about that. The second reason is there's a lot of these guys, like I said, that are scientists, that are professors, that are professionals, that have careers, that they can't put that on the line. If they start talking about Israel, they're going to be blackballed. They're going to be fired from their positions. They're going to be ostracized and so forth. So they can't do that. So they have to play it safe. Well, we can talk about controlled demolitions in our little circles, and we can talk about Al-Qaeda in our little circles, but God forbid we talk about Israel, because if we do, there's going to be hell to pay afterwards. And they're worried about things like that. Those are a couple reasons right off the bat. And then third is that there's just absolute disinfo artists out there that don't care whatsoever. That's what their paid job is by the government, is to lead people in the wrong direction. So that's why they don't talk about it. John Kaminsky talks about Israel's role. Now, I published his first book, I think it's called The Day America Died, and he broached the topic even before 9/11 evil came out. So yeah, there's others out there who will talk about this, but not many. And what I write in Made in Israel, in the introductory chapter, I say any 9/11, and this is in quotations, truther, any 9/11 truther who fails to expose Israel's role has, in essence, chosen to protect the worst killers among us.
Do you think that Griffin is part of the disinformation campaign?
I think he's part of the omission campaign. He simply omits it. 99% of them are fake 9/11 truthers. So they're among their own. You know, whether they're deliberate disinfo or it's omission or whatever, there's nobody questioning David Ray Griffin in the 9/11 truth movement. When he goes to his conferences, there's not people standing up and asking him or challenging him, why aren't you talking about Israel? Because they're all among their own. See, one thing I noticed early on, and this was way back in the trenches, in the first years after 9/11, is all of these 9/11 sites started popping up. 9/11truth.org and 9/11 this and 9/11 that. And you know what they did was they all linked to each other. But they didn't link to any of the legitimate sites, like Wing TV or American Free Press or Dave McGowan or John Kaminsky or any of these other guys. So what they have is this incestuous little cabal where they all bounce around among each other. And what they want to do is, if somebody's out there that's not conspiracy-minded, but then all of a sudden starts scratching their head and says, you know what, something doesn't seem right about 9/11. So they go on Google, punch in 9/11 conspiracy, 9/11 truth, and you go right to 9/11truth.org. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh man, this is fantastic. And then you see all the links down the side of the page, 9/11 this, 9/11 that, and you start bouncing all around. But there's no real 9/11 truth there, Dave.
Right.
So what they do is they act as a corral. You have people in the Fox News corral, and you have people in the CNN corral, and people in the ABC, NBC, CBS corral, people in the MSNBC corral. And then if they get disillusioned with them, they bounce onto another site. Oh, and it's the 9/11truth.org corral. And they stay in that little circle because they all link to each other, and they never get outside of it. So it's all very ingeniously planned, and I have a book called 9/11 Betrayed that's available on the Wing TV site, wingtv.net, that the entire book is about the phony 9/11 truth movement. We analyzed this. We talked about it on Wing TV. The whole thing is clear to me. There's no mystery any longer that they're all put in place to keep people away from the fundamental question, which is Israel's role. And then what you have also is a lot of useful idiots. The people that think they're on the right path, but they're too gullible or naive or resistant to actually challenge these people and ask them, why aren't you talking about this? If there's like a chat room there or a forum, what happens, and this happened back in the Wing TV days, is we are told, if you talk about Israel, you will be banned from this forum. That's it. It's all right there. People like Janice Matthews actually did that. Janice Matthews actually threatened to kick and did kick people off of websites if they spoke about Israel's role in 9/11. If there is such a thing as 9/11 truth, why are they so afraid of the truth? How can a truth movement be afraid of truth?
That's what I don't get. By talking about this, I think there could be some people who might feel that it's very conspiratorial, that Israel or Jews could control all of these people to do what they did, to say, look, you're not allowed to talk. How nonsensical is it to say that? You're not allowed to talk about Israel. What? I can talk about whatever I want to talk about.
Well, let me ask you this, though. How successful has it been 10 years later?
Incredibly successful.
Yeah. So there is a conspiracy there if 10 years later they've been this absolutely effective in what they were trying to do. They didn't want their role known, and they've been effective. So if people say, oh, well, this is too conspiratorial, well, it is conspiratorial because look at the end result. They were successful. They are successful. Every person, like I said earlier, every person in this so-called 9/11 truth movement that fails to identify the mass murderers, then how can they look at themselves in the mirror? How can they have any type of conscience whatsoever? They know of Israel's role, and they can't play stupid with me or anybody else. They know what Israel did because they go out there and read this information. That's why David Ray Griffin, I'm sure, didn't ask me for my book, is then he has plausible denial. He says, oh, well, I didn't read that book. You know, that's why he didn't ask for it. So what they have here is a protection racket so that these monsters can go free. And in my view, it's inexcusable. I could never, ever, ever look at myself in the mirror if I kept withholding this type of information. And it's, I think, especially egregious with somebody like David Ray Griffin, who might be the most well-known researcher in the 9/11 community, maybe other than Dylan Avery, who produced Loose Change. Dylan Avery absolutely refuses to talk about Israel's role in 9/11. And he's released three different versions of Loose Change. This has been viewed by millions of people.
And it doesn't mention Israel at all.
No, there's no mention whatsoever of Israeli involvement in any of the three versions that he's released. And in Made in Israel, I actually list all of the people in the 9/11 quote-unquote truth movement that are actually Jewish themselves, one of them being Dylan Avery. So there's quite a number of these people that are, because of their allegiance to Israel or allegiance to the Jewish religion or the Jewish people or whatever, they've said this is taboo. They won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's traitorous because they are protecting mass murderers. This was a crime not only against the American people, but against our nation. And these people know of Israel's involvement. This is traitorous, what they're doing. I've been saying it for years that it's traitorous, it's treasonous, that they're betraying not only their country, they're betraying the human race, and not talking about who did the worst terrorist attack of the 21st century. That's what they're doing. Every single name that's listed, then I put if they're Jewish right next to their name. What it does is it reinforces over and over and over and over and over again how predominant they are in this operation. I list all the New York City insiders, people that arranged the sale of the World Trade Center towers, those who insured it, the person who bought it, Larry Silverstein, his role in WTC-7 and bringing it down, how much insurance money he collected, who operated the security, not only at the World Trade Center complex, but at all the airports of departure. We have vast amounts of information on the dancing Israelis and urban moving systems that employed them, which was really nothing more than a shell for the Mossad. Dov Zakim, who is possibly the mastermind behind this whole thing, all the connections to the Mossad, the 9/11 Commission cover-up, all the judges and attorneys and people inside the government that were Jewish, the Israeli spy rings that were operated before 9/11, and their connection to the Muslim patsies that ended up being the fall guys for this, all the neocons who were the Israeli firsters. This is the final taboo. This is the dangerous stuff. And this isn't people like Alex Jones, who's just going to fearmonger you and dance around the edges and be part of the Israeli protection racket. This is the stuff that the ADL doesn't want you to read. This is the stuff that the Southern Poverty Law Center doesn't want you to read. If they could ban books, this is the book they would ban. I'm beyond really getting angry about it anymore because I've been through those trenches. And, you know, I've come out the other side and I realize the game. And that's all it is. It's a game that's being played. And I'm cynical and jaded and I have my street smarts and I have my senses about me. And I realize when a con job is being played. I couldn't have said the same thing 7 years ago or 8 years ago because, you know what, I'll be honest. In 2002, 2003, I still thought, you know what, a 9/11 truth movement, we can actually change the world. Now, I even had some suspicions then.
Your plan and my plan is to get this book into the hands of as many people as we can. And then maybe they'll read it and go, wait a second. First of all, Victor Thorne can't really be printing something that's not true because he would be sued, right?
I would imagine. I name the names. People like Alex Jones, they go around and they talk about the New World Order or the globalists or the elitists.
Right.
And they leave it all in these shadowy conceptual terms. I'm not saying the New World Order did it, or the elitists, or the globalists. I name the names every single page. And not only are the names there, behind their name then it says Jewish, or neocons, or Zionists. But the vast majority are Jewish that are listed.
So what's the significance of listing Jewish next to the names?
To reiterate over and over and over again, so there's no mistaking.
So it's not coincidence that all of these, pretty much 99% of all the people who were intimately involved in 9/11 were Jews. That's not a coincidence. That's what you're saying, right?
They're not Arabs. They're not Chinese. They're not Russians. They're not Colombians. And they're not Africans. They're not Germans. They're Jews. And that's why I did it, because some people can read a name and it might not click. So I want there to be zero doubt, so there's no mistaking it. This is who did it. Page after page after page after page, all the names are listed. Their role in it, how they're connected to other people that are Jewish in it. It's a big puzzle that every single piece now has been put in place. It's there.
Right. Let's talk about this Jewish thing, because this is significant, and you're not afraid to talk about anything. I'm not afraid to talk about anything. I wish everybody was like that, because if everybody was like that, then obviously the world would be a lot better place, because why should there be a taboo on anything, really? At least to talk about. Why can't we talk about anything? So let's talk about the Jewish element of your book, where in all the names, you put a hyphen and you put Jewish, or like we said before, Zionist or neocon. The Jewish people are a very tight-knit group. Would you say that that's true?
Well, that's absolutely true. Okay. And they have been for millennia because of sheer survival. Everywhere they've ever been, either been genocided, evicted, warred upon, killed, slaughtered, run out of town, for millennia.
They're not really liked overall, it seems. Right. And I guess there's a reason why they're not liked. But without getting into the historical end of it in too much detail or the psychological end of it, throughout their existence, they've been preyed upon, attacked for whatever reason or reasons.
Because they undermine wherever they go. They want to undermine it and then take it over. That's what they do. They undermine and then take over. And throughout history, when they've been discovered, that's when they've been warred upon, genocide, run out of town, attacked, whatever, is that the veil of illusion has been pulled off and everyone's eyes are opened. And they say, oh, this is who's doing it. And then they get run out of town and they go somewhere else and do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened over and over. And there's actually even lists out there on the internet where people have researched this, historians, and listed every single country that they've been run out of through history. It's not made up. It's historical fact.
Right. So the country's just finally saying enough is enough. Get out.
Yeah.
You're causing too much problem in our country. You're destabilizing it for whatever reason or reasons, and we want you out. And they've been ejected, like you said, from many countries going back.
Well, and the reason is that they want control. That's the reason, is they want to take control of the society or country that they've infiltrated. It's pretty simple.
Okay.
In the subtitle of this book, I added 9/11 in the Jewish plot against America. So I don't want this simply to be construed as a neocon thing or a Zionist thing or the Mossad or even the Nation of Israel. It has to go deeper, right down into the crux. And the crux of it all, Dave, is Judaism. That is the cancer of the whole thing. The Judaic religion is the cancer. And that's why I had to include Jewish in there. Even among people that aren't afraid to talk about Israel, they still, a lot of them, make a distinction. We can name Zionists, but we can't really talk about Judaism. So they have a cop-out there that, you know, oh, we can't really talk about the religion, but that is the crux. And if you go back to the Talmud, which was originally an oral tradition that developed then into the written Talmud, this is what 9/11 was. Ultimately, was Talmudic sorcery. This was a magical rite. This was a ritual that they performed that day to assume control. And that's what they did that day. They assumed control economically, militaristically, propaganda-wise. Every aspect of American society that day was under their control, because everyone sat in front of their television sets and was hypnotized, transfixed by this. And there was so much fear that day that even now, 10 years later, when people get on an airplane, they willingly allow themselves to basically be strip searched or have these radar machines photograph their bodies in the nude through their clothes. Now, 10 years ago, as Dave McGowan said, who I interviewed for the AFP issue, he said 10 years ago, this would be unthinkable. There is no way this could be done. But because so much fear was inundated that day, that look at what they get away with now.
Right.
Look at it. The propaganda that we're inundated with on a daily basis is wrong. Israel isn't America's greatest ally. Israel isn't our best friend. Israel isn't any of those things. Israel is our enemy.
Victor Thorne, author of Made in Israel, 9/11, the Jewish Plot Against America, the missing piece to the mystery of 9/11.
And so, there you have it, folks. It's quite a lot of important information that we need to get out there more. Certainly, look into all of this for yourself. And then William Cooper, that is a gentleman I've been a great admirer of. I have extensively studied his book. I recommend you do the same. Unfortunately, I didn't catch his broadcasts back when he was doing them live. I wasn't aware he was broadcasting. Only aware of his book. Early on there, but it is quite amazing with his sources and collection of data for him to have predicted even that Osama bin Laden would be implicated, no less. Yeah, we had so many key players here. And Well, what they did to Cooper at the time was probably so that he wouldn't start talking more. I mean, he thought it was really going down. Police state, FEMA camps, extermination plans, rounding up citizens who are dissidents. He thought everything was about to begin when 9/11 happened. So 2 months later, then government agents, with a flimsy justification, especially considering the timing, he had an all-out Western-style shootout. And his wife was there as well. At his, what is that, desert ranch, I guess you'd call it, where he lived. But, alas, William Cooper was quite aware of what had been planned. He didn't quite see how much were infiltrated by international Jewry. But he certainly saw, I think, a lot of the Israeli connections to much of what is orchestrated. He just perhaps didn't place a couple pieces of the puzzle in his era. I would suggest that you copy any good articles, copy any media which is pertinent, especially regarding topics like 9/11 or some of these engineered incidents. If you do want them for archival purposes, you could also drive yourself insane, though, playing catch-up with the social engineering, staged propaganda, and the like, and never controlling the narrative. Always on the defense or the reaction to something the establishment is orchestrating. So you do want to balance, I'd say, reaction to the current climate with what you find most important to share and to make progress on. This is all very important information, but people can get exhausted about it. And people say it's just not worth covering anymore. You'll hear that even more about World War II. They'll say it's so long ago, it doesn't matter what happened. Now you're hearing it, I'm sure, already from millennials about 9/11. Both of these things are important because they're such concise examples of so many forces at work here, motives and agendas at play, and help you to see deception and engineered reality far more easily than other instances. You start to recognize patterns, and once you see what many of these men, organizations, even nation states are capable of, you're willing to listen with discretion to sources you may have otherwise resisted. We have cognitive dissonance, even on an unconscious, completely unconscious level. We omit to maintain so much of what we invest in. Many people invest their identity and trust and faith in their government, the United States, and their nation. And it's part of their identity. You can anger people sometimes when you talk about 9/11 because of this. So, it's still something that for some requires a breaking point. Saturation with the amount of information overwhelming them toward the reality of what took place. You could possibly go insane in the truther movement in general. really have to balance what can be accomplished and not be compromising at the same time. Those who have infiltrated on so many levels, disassembling this nation, do you think we'd be at the state we are now? The priorities and the social engineering agendas out there, just how far things have strayed. Would it be quite this bad, this close to a Weimar Republic, were it not for 9/11? I don't know. We will discuss all of this further, folks. So I bid you farewell, and we will speak again soon. Until then, transcend the construct. Regards.